welcome back to the latest episode of the Master of None podcast. I'm your host, as always, Stephen Murphy, joined by the regular rugby crew of Westy and Sam, here to recap the last of the autumn internationals. And Connacht Rugby are back. There was some big news today that we'll get stuck into later on. Some massive news, some would say. But before we get stuck into that, as always, Westy, how are you? How was your weekend?
I'm pretty good. Had a lovely weekend of lying on the couch watching rugby, which normally you get in trouble for, but when you have an injured knee, people are like, oh great, you found something to keep yourself busy. So,
yeah. Oh yeah, how is the knee?
The knee's okay. I can now climb stairs unassisted. But I can walk, but very slowly.
Yeah, well, you're taking in the world around you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I could always walk, but I had a really bad limp, whereas now I'm just really slow and careful.
You said it shells now, walk with a limp. There's a 50 Cent reference for anybody. Westy, you're definitely a big 50 Cent fan, right?
I believe I have The Massacre within my CD collection at home.
Oh, wow. I would say that's quite the... Westy definitely has an eclectic CD collection, I'd imagine. You can go from, I'd say, Lady Gaga to 50 Cent, Fleetwood Mac. Me and Westy spent an entire trip back from Ballina listening to Fleetwood Mac in his car. Do you remember that, Westy?
Yeah, that's the CD's little car, Matt Rivers. Great song never made.
Oh, what an absolute... Just banger. Hit, like Tig Furlong, the jukebox. Just hit after hit, man. Incredible. Sam, how was your weekend?
Yeah, it's good. Just watching rugby, the same as Westy, just sitting in, watching rugby, watching a bit of soccer, watching some Formula One, minding the daughter all day Saturday. So she's getting a taste for the old Saturday afternoon, Saturday mid-morning rugby sessions, watching some Tier 2, watching some women's rugby, watching some serious games of rugby, like that France-New Zealand to finish off the Saturday evening. I felt so bad for the Ireland game because like no one wanted to watch that then.
Yeah. Corey's going to be pissed off if you raise your daughter to also like loads of sports. She's going to be raging, Sam.
Nah, she'd be all right with it because then I'll just mind her all day Saturday watching loads of sports or playing loads of sports.
That is a good point.
No, she's. I think she probably enjoyed the women's game the most. So, you know, hopefully she'll grow up into a rugby player and I get to go down on Saturdays or Sundays and, you know, stand on the sideline watching her play and become one of them old Alakadoos that's hanging around the club, you know. Everyone's like, that guy was shit at rugby back in the day. Why is he still here?
Yeah, he's holding on. I was back in the beautiful home county of Cavan for the weekend. Didn't get to see all the rugby that I wanted to. I got to see the Irish game and I got to see France, New Zealand, sort of like I was watching on my phone in my brother's house, kind of flicking in and out. Saw some that Roman Antimac stuff. Oh, Jesus Christ. We'll get into that. That was just incredible. But yeah, Formula One, yeah, same time as the Irish game. Who fucking planned that? One of the most anticipated races in I don't know how long, and they throw it on the same time as the fucking Irish game. I was raging.
Yeah, they just don't. They don't know the niche demographic that is Irish rugby fans.
Formula One fans.
Not a huge not amount of crossover there.
Yeah, not the best Venn diagram in the world, that's for sure. But yeah, we're here to talk about the Irish rugby, and as I said, we'll get into Connacht later on. But Ireland defeated Argentina at the weekend, 53-7. Again, started off pretty competitive, but at the end, kind of Argentina definitely ran out of steam. But Westy, and to be fair to Argentina, this is what they're finishing up a 3.5 month trip. They haven't had a really good run of form going at all. Rugby Championship, they lost every game. Is Argentina rugby in a bad spot, or is it just the year that it is kind of thing?
I think they're almost suffering the worst from the fallout of COVID. You know, we've seen kind of the rise of the provincial league in New Zealand, and the other than taking in Australia and Manu Pacifica and Fiji, whereas the Jaguares have kind of been disbanded and. Well, not disbanded, but they've kind of been left without a league to play in, and the players have kind of gone off into, most of them now playing the Premiership, I think, with a few going to France and a few playing even in the Super Rugby still with other teams. But I think structurally, it is an issue when you see them come out of lockdown and beat the All Blacks for the first time, and then a year later to go on such a kind of long losing streak. I don't think you can take the games, especially the Ireland game, I don't think you can take too much out of that from their perspective. They looked exhausted from minute one. Like you can even see from missing those two penalties, Cabelli was dropping the ball just short of the try line. Like these are kind of these are errors that come from fatigue and errors that come from even a kind of mental strain of being in a lockdown for so long. So I don't think it's worries yet. Like Argentina they do come good in World Cups. We know they do. We've seen it happen so many times before. So I don't think we should be too worried, but it is, I think what we're seeing now is a symptom of what's happened to them in COVID and that they have kind of been a little bit left out in the lurch. Maybe let's say the most so of any of the top tier international teams. They're the ones that kind of maybe lack that little bit of structure, a little bit of clarity maybe on how they're going to move forward.
Yeah, that's very true. Sam, we were talking about team selection when they heard the team. We all kind of would have probably seen like a few more changes. He kind of stuck with a very similar pack on the day. Some changes had to be made due to injuries, but we were saying last weekend the main thing we wanted to see was a very similar style of play that bet the All Blacks, and I think we saw that on Sunday, didn't we?
Yeah, I think it's clear to see now that the game plan is not necessarily always going to be the same, but it's always going to be proactive, it's always going to be aggressive, it's always going to... We're using the word expansive a lot, which would lead you to believe that there's going to be a lot of wide passing and a lot of offloading. But actually, no, it's not necessarily expansive, but it's extremely proactive. It's very quick. It's taking the ball off the nine or taking the ball before the nine gets to the ruck. If you see a gap, you take it. We saw Furlong kind of taking that opportunity to do that. We've seen backs using the wide option, but we've also seen, you know, just pluses from the forward pod. So they're taking it up, but instead of taking the contact on the gain line, they're plus one-ing it and getting a little breakthrough on a soft shoulder. So I think that the game plan, yeah, it's not necessarily going to be a like for like every game, but I think it's clear to see that what Farrell is wanting them to do is to play with their heads up, to play positive rugby, to play to their strengths, which is, you know, brilliant. You see the likes of Henshaw coming in for Aki at the weekend, and, you know, it wasn't his best game. That's to be understood for how long he was out. But what he did do was he went, you know, I'm Robbie Henshaw and I'm going to run really hard and I'm going to hit a hot, soft shoulder, but I'm also going to give a quick pass if I need to. So I think that allowing them to play to their strengths instead of to an extremely structured version of a game plan is the game plan. It's being positive with the ball and it's being proactive. And I was happy to see that. Selection aside, I was disappointed enough with the selection just because for me, the win against Argentina 53-7 in the autumn internationals isn't the most beneficial outcome from this three tests. We get very few tests now as a group before the World Cup, and the more meaningful you claim every test is, the less opportunity for blooding people, for getting people with small amount of caps in and getting them the proper game time, proper experience that they're going to need going into a World Cup. But, you know, on the whole, no, you can't fault it. It was a positive display against what Westy said and what, you know, we kind of could all see was just a kind of disjointed Argentina team that have really not had a great 2 years. They've been, it's almost kind of seemed like it's all piled up against them because, you know, for years they have been almost the not the whipping boy, but the most forgettable or the most forgotten of the tier one nations. You know, they were always kind of pushing at the bottom of the tier one, and that's still the case. Even though they're in the rugby championship, it was no way on their terms. They haven't played a game in 2 years at home. They've all been away from home nonstop. They were left out of a photo shoot. They weren't happy about that. Their club team have been, you know, gotten kicked out of the league. So they're kind of shopping players around, trying to get them contracts and trying to shop clubs around. I think one of their clubs, it might be Jaguar, is going to be in the Currie Cup First Division along with a couple of Georgian teams and some others. So it's not great for Argentina at the moment. And I think that that full strength Ireland team just really did take them apart without ever getting out of second gear.
Yeah, you can see like in patches they were obviously very, very threatening, but their line out wasn't great. You know, the scrum, their set piece, you know, the stuff that really separates, you says, the top tier teams from the kind of second tier teams is where the game was kind of won and lost. And as Westy said, they did look exhausted. Westy, another question we had kind of from last week as well is we wanted to see Carberry get some good game time with what we would call our first choice pack, or at least you know, the pack that starts the game that was so dominant against the All Blacks. How do you think he did overall on Sunday?
Yeah, I think he played pretty well. Like, I don't think it was an all-round performance just yet, but he definitely kind of rose to the occasion. It was a much slower game than the last two games. Now, I'm not laying any particular blame on Ireland that, like, Argentina had clearly done their homework against New Zealand. We were committing one, maybe two men to the rucks. We were quite, you know, pushing the ref. There was quite a lot of players that could have been off their feet, but we were focusing on moving it quickly, whereas against Argentina, we had to commit more men to the ruck, so the ball was genuinely slowed down a bit. It's not necessarily that it's Murray instead of Gibson Park. So I think that altered the way that we played. It did move into a much more forward-centric game as the game progressed on. I thought it was a very capable performance from Carberry, and I actually thought he was far better when he moved to full back. I thought having that extra space to read the game and been able to insert himself into the line. I mean, he had that fantastic break late in the second half when he came from full back. So I think he was slightly better in that position, but like I'm pretty happy with how he went. I think he did all that was expected of him. I think his kicking was almost perfect. Maybe there was one or two left behind, but yeah, he was good. I still don't think that an Ireland jersey is where you should be playing your way into form. The real test now is if he can go back to Munster and keep playing like that. If he goes back to Munster and still can't find his form and ends up in an Ireland jersey again in the Six Nations, then I think there has to be some questions asked about what our game plan is here.
It is. It like the game in Thomann where Connacht were robbed down Thomann. Like he looked so, like the shell of a man that he was, that he even is now, is so much more confident looking than even that night in Thomann. It is exciting, Wesley, though, to think of, you know, if Keenan goes off, say 60 minutes, 65 minutes, slotting Carberry back into that position, you know, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's nice to have options. And I think it's almost a shame that the option is one position that's pretty much shored up by Hugo Keenan. You know, I think almost even the biggest of Carberry fans would be shocked if he started ahead of Hugo Keenan at fullback, just because Keenan's been so consistent, so good in jersey since he came on the scene. But it's great to have that in a game. As you say, if you can, not necessarily, like, first off, with injuries, if you can move players around, it helps your bench be a bit more dynamic. If you've got Carberry on the bench to cover fullback and 10. But at the same time, if you're coming up against England and your game plan isn't working, that's a really good way to change a game. We can introduce that, you know, Sam was giving out last week about the tag of the second playmaker, you know, the latest buzzword that we have. But it is a great way to change a game. Like I've said before, a real problem Ireland have had is that when we are, you know, struggling to find our feet in a game, we bring on subs and it's just more of the same. Whereas bringing on someone like Carberry in another position and keeping Sexton on the pitch, or keeping Harry Byrne on the pitch, or please God, keeping Jack Carthy on the pitch at some point, it just offers another way of attack. And it is easier to change a game when you bring on somebody like that in a pivotal role like fullback, where they can pick the moments that they want to try and, where they want to kind of pick the moments they want to get involved on the attack, you know?
Hear me out though. You got Sexton at 10, stick in Frawley, the first person to be deemed the second playmaker at 12. Ringrose, everyone's chatting about him, a second playmaker from the weekend at 13. Carberry at 15. And you got four playmakers. What's better than two playmakers? Four playmakers.
That's double the playmaking ability.
Yeah, and then Lowe has become a playmaking wing, so...
Tadhg Furlong is a playmaking prop. We're just a team full of playmakers.
Like, it's actually... It's unfortunate that Furlong is probably our best centre at the moment, so...
Yeah, it is. We need to get a minutes of 10. We just have to get a minutes of 10.
But it could go a long way towards my, like, a team full of props versus a team full of nines question, you know? He'd do a number every position on the pitch, I reckon. Imagine yeah, I think played him at 8 and you picked
if
him
the
went.
Team full of props is Tadhg Furlong, then I'm picking the team full of props.
But imagine if you put Furlong at 8 and you got a 5-meter scrum, pick and go. I think that's more devastating than any. Like,
no one's stopping that.
No one is stopping that. I'm all right with that.
Another player that was a lot of focus in that game was Conor Murray. West sort of touched on it. Like, he will come under probably criticism for being slower, but it's like we're not the biggest Conor Murray fans here. But the pack was definitely not as dominant as the week before, or even the 2 weeks before against Japan. It was, as West said, much slower ball. But Sam, the question is there: can Conor Murray play in that fast-paced style of rugby? Does it suit his game?
No, I don't think it does. I think it might have suited an earlier version of Conor Murray, but Conor Murray is extremely, you know, he's extremely successful at what he does. He's well versed at what he does, and he's developed a game and a style of game that suits that. And Ireland have utilized that for years. And, you know, if that is to be the end of Conor Murray's international career, because that's the type of game that Ireland are playing, or the waning down of Conor Murray's international career, because that's the type of game that Ireland are playing, that's a very unfortunate thing for him as professional and for Irish fans, because he's been brilliant for Ireland in the past. But I think that what I said earlier, which Andy Farrell likes his teams to play to their strengths, I think that is probably one of the reasons why you can still have a Conor Murray. You're not necessarily going to be as fast as a Gibson Park team or a Doak team or a Casey team, but you're going to have an extremely smart, good, solid player. And that there will be times when you need that. You need that cool head. You need that experience. You need the kicking that he has. Even, you know, one or two times he box kicked really smartly. Instead of just holding it for 5 seconds and sticking it straight up into this clouds, he box kicked very smartly. And, you know, he is able to kick. So being able to manipulate that into kicking into space instead of kicking into the sky is something he can do. So, no, I don't. I think that the game plan, if part and parcel of the game plan is to play really quickly, I think that that will have a negative effect on his chances of starting for Ireland. But I'm not sure if that's necessarily on the board when they say, what's the game plan? Speed. I don't think so. I think the game plan is to play to the strength of the players on the pitch. And I think that's what Farrell is getting out of them the best. You see Furlong and Porter playing a different type of game now, but it's a game that everyone knew they had because everyone has forever called them the athletic props in the world, or some of the most athletic props in the world. So, you know, I don't think it's the end of Conor Murray at all. I wasn't overly impressed with him, but I'm not ever overly impressed with him. But one thing that he'll always do is he'll always give you a good shift anyway. So
the big question of Murray's now is European games coming up for Munster. Who starts in that nine jersey? Because that's the question that, you know, when a European game comes to town, you're picking your best players. And who do Munster, who does Van Graan and Larkham, who are they seeing as the better of the two scrum halves? Because it's like Casey's played a lot more this year. I know Murray's been injured too. So it'll be interesting if he slots back into that nine for the European games, then I think that will say a lot too. And we'll find out then. Argentina did not help themselves, obviously, as we said. Their discipline and their set piece were poor, highlighted by Lavanini's horrible tackle or attempt of a clean-out. I don't even know. I think it's generous calling it attempt of a clean-out on Keane Healy. Keane Healy very lucky not to do some damage on his knee or even his neck and shoulders. But it did give us the Peter O'Mahony just gem and him cementing his place as my favourite Irish player of all time with, and I quote, "Hard man you are, good man yourself, very unlike you." Like, first of all, Lavanini has probably no idea what Peter O'Mahony is saying. It's in a harsh Munster accent. Then even when he went over to shake Healy's hand after the red card, O'Mahony is just staring daggers at him. I love it so much. But Westy, like, Lavanini, like, this guy's a bit of a thug. He's obviously a history. Like, would you, this has to be taken into consideration when being selected for a team from now on. Like, he's just a liability.
Yeah, and I mean, Claremont now will suffer the consequences, really, because he's no doubt there's going to be a hefty ban coming his way after an attack like that. I think, and again, even seeing how he reacts to it after he's done it. And, you know, throughout the game, I don't think he was particularly, dirty or particularly aggressive throughout the game. But I think it's a moment born out of frustration from their day and being that far behind and him kind of seeing a shot and, you know, seeing red and kind of doing something and instantly knowing that he's screwed. Some people say it's a pointless gesture. I do appreciate that he goes over to Keane Healy afterwards and apologises. You know, I think that does take something to apologise for what you've done. But yeah, you wonder, you know, the Argentinian player pool isn't massive as it is. So are you going to now sacrifice somebody who has, you know, plays top level rugby, you know, quite regularly, who's played, what does he have? Is it 60 or 70, somewhere between 60 and 70 caps for Argentina? It'd be difficult for them to jettison completely, but it now is an extra thing they have to worry about. You know, he's the most carded player in international rugby.
It'd be interesting to see now in these hearings, because, you know, they're always like a decent record in the past. Like, there's nothing you can say for this guy. Like, not even Owen Farrell could get away with this level of mischief that this guy gets up to.
No, what is it like Ron Burgundy? He was like, I'm impressed.
Like, a whole wheel of cheese? That is impressive. I loved O'Mahony in that. In fairness, he's come out since and he said, like, obviously he was angry at the time, but he did. I've also been on the other side of that, which also highlights O'Mahony's why I love him so much too. But Sam, Ireland scored 142 points over these three games, conceded only 32 points. When we saw these original fixtures playing Japan, the All Blacks, and Argentina, three teams known for their attacking prowess when it clicks, I think we would have presumed not as high scoring and definitely conceding a lot more, wouldn't we?
Yeah, I think that's one of the highlights of it. And Farrell said that against Japan and everyone kind of laughed at him because we put 60 odd on them. But the defense was brilliant. Against New Zealand, like, you can see that New Zealand-France game, like, how many tries they conceded there. I know they were off the boil throughout the series. But, you know, to not concede that many, to score that many, shows how positively they were trying to play. But it also shows that they're structurally, you know, all together. They're all, you know, singing off the same hymn sheet, and it allowed them to function as a team. And the defense does set up a good platform for the attack. So, you know, I think it's an extremely positive set of results. Whether or not it's exactly what people like myself would have wanted from the tests or from the three tests is another question. But no, I think, you know, if you look at those three results against three teams that have like beaten us in World Cups previously, I think that it's, you know, it's brilliant and it's well done. And I think I'm really happy now to see that Farrell is getting a little less slack or no slack now off the back of it, because it's just giving him a bit of kind of quiet, like an opportunity to quietly go about his work for the next couple of months instead of it just being a constant question about whether or not he's good enough. I think it's just going to shut some people up for a series or two, and, you know, might get him past the World Cup and without the media getting on his back and the fans getting on his back.
Westy, it's a good point to raise. Like, how much weight do we put into these wins? We know that that wasn't the Japan that beat us in the World Cup. We know that that's not the Argentina that beat us in the World Cup. Like, those two teams did not play anywhere near their potential on the days. The All Blacks is a fantastic victory because we really just dominated them from, you know, the first minute. Would you put on those wins, you know, compared to, like, if we had to bet Japan at their flying best or Argentina at their flying best?
It's a difficult one, right? Because, I mean, you can only play who turns up on the day, right? Like, you can't say Ireland did anything wrong just because Japan weren't firing on all cylinders. And we did a pretty good job of shutting down, kind of, you know, our line speed was so good that we did, you know, make their game a little more difficult to play. You know, it's kind of like we were talking about, like, Connacht losing our preseason friendlies, you know. It doesn't really mean anything, but, like, you feel a lot better that you won it. Now, this is obviously not the same as a preseason friendly, but I think it puts you in a great position, right? It gives you a platform to build on. The fact that you have these victories, it's even at a, forget the rugby for a second, on a psychological level, you're looking at guys out there now, there's guys on that team who have beaten the All Blacks two out of the last three times they've played them. So that's a great mindset to be in. Once you have them, they never have this. They know nothing of 111 years of losing to the All Blacks. You know, there's guys on that team who've never lost to Japan. You know nothing about being knocked out of a World Cup by Argentina. So the fact that you can get these wins over, the only worrying factor about it is that it might kind of lull you into a false sense of security. Even before the 2015 World Cup, I think we had beaten Argentina in autumn internationals a year or two before that as well. And then they knocked us out in the quarterfinals. So I think it's great for the team to win and great to win so well and great to play such good rugby. You said it yourself, the Argentina game, okay, it wasn't the exact same game plan. It was an adjusted game plan because you have to play the team that show up against you. So I think it's great for the team. It's great for the players involved. But I think the only worry is that, you know, it's like when we were named number one team in the world, you know, probably the worst thing that ever happened to us because we believed for a second that we were, and we probably were.
Yeah, all the teams that were building any sort of depth with any sort of game plan towards the World Cup were like, so what? You're at the top of the table now. Like, that means absolutely nothing. The world rankings mean nothing except for when you're picking the teams that you're playing against in the World Cup. They're doing the draw. That's the only time that it means anything. So being number one in the world is literally just you standing on top of a ladder looking down going, ha, aren't I great? But it's more of a ladder to fall off. So,
yeah, and I think that's, you know, we've kind of learned that the hard way after the last World Cup. But no, I think you have to give credit where credit's due, and you have to take confidence from these wins. Like, if anything, the main focus of these wins is that we'll have confidence going to the Six Nations, and hopefully if we perform well there, we carry that confidence on with us. This isn't the same as being, you know, world number one a year out from a World Cup. You know, we have 2 years now. So, again, like I've said it before, I wouldn't be adverse to, you know, we're going to New Zealand next summer, right? I wouldn't be adverse to, you know, not sacrificing one of those games, but playing almost two completely different 15s and getting players out and getting that kind of golden god image of the All Blacks, like, out of people's minds.
I tell you right now, there is not a chance.
I know.
He made like four changes for Argentina in the autumn internationals. He's never going to, like, you know, throw the boys on.
Of those three games, so that's what, 240 minutes, Sexton's playing 238 of those minutes. And that's just
and
a fact.
He's still moaning when he's getting pulled off with 2 minutes to go.
Yeah, he's like, oh, come on. Yeah. Before we move on from Ireland, I have two more kind of points I want to touch on. Sam Harry Byrne obviously got on, had probably a good half an hour on the pitch. What did you think of his performance?
I think exactly the same way I thought I would feel. I thought he was obviously rusty and should not have been there, to be honest. I think, you know, having him in, having played so little rugby this year and, you know, in my opinion, too little rugby in his career to actually bring him in. I don't understand the idea between parachuting players in to try and get them experience. He's not experienced enough in my mind. And he showed that he showed that he was both rusty and not experienced enough. It wasn't a good display from him. He didn't do too much. He made a few mistakes. One was on advantage, which everyone was going, you can give it to him because it was on advantage. But I'll caveat that by saying the way we used advantage against the All Blacks was amazingly smart and well executed. And that's what we should be aiming to do with advantage, is not just kick to nothing. But yeah, I think the best thing that happened for Harry Byrne when he came on and played there was how good Carberry was at fullback, because I do think that the fullback question is going to keep arising with Carberry. Is he a better fullback? Leinster fans will say at Leinster that's predominantly where he played and he played his best rugby. For Munster so far, kind of when he came back from injury, that was where he was playing when he had one or two good showings. And then since going to 10, he's not been as impressive. And at the weekend, I don't understand why he was given man of the match. I thought he was good. I thought he was much better when he went to fullback. But from 10, I wasn't as impressed. I don't think, I think he did nothing wrong. But yeah, I think that...
He needed a new phone.
Hmm?
He said beforehand he needs a new phone. So they're like, oh, don't worry, we got you.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking like these lads can afford phones. Give me the phone and give them the little trophy that they
want. I know. What the fuck is Carberry doing with a brand? He's just going to give it to one of his mates. Yeah. Like, it's just pointless.
No, I think on the whole, the Harry Byrne thing, I think, you know, we got away with it because we were beating Argentina and we were absolutely hocking them and they weren't up to much because of the circumstances around it. Which, yeah, I think that everyone looking at these results against New Zealand, Argentina, and to a lesser extent, Japan, have to not forget about the circumstances surrounding it. They're off the back of a full season and a massively impactful rugby championship where none of them were allowed to be at home. I think New Zealand players have all been away for 2-3 months. Argentina haven't been home since July. Like it's mental to think that that's the case and that everyone's not... Like I said similar, and someone in a WhatsApp group was like, they're professional sports people, they should put up with it. I was like, professional sports people are people. They will be affected by being away from their families since July. It's going to happen. So, like, you have to understand that the mental fatigue as well as the physical fatigue will be getting to them. And we have to take all these wins with a pinch of salt. Yes, they were brilliant. It was great to see a positive style of play. And it was great to see those sort of things. You can take a lot of positives from these Autumn Internationals. But it needs to happen in the Six Nations and needs to happen consistently from now on. You know, next year when the roles are reversed and we're down in New Zealand off the back of a grueling season, we need to play positively and we need to put a result up there to prove that this wasn't a complete accident.
Yeah, I think it's also, you know, it's only fair to say that Harry Byrne not playing great, it's not his fault. The man hasn't played much rugby. That's, you know what I mean? And I know you weren't saying that, but I'm just saying if someone listened to that and were like, oh, the lads are slagging off Harry Byrne. The man has played, what did you say, Westy? He played nearly
he's
more.
Now made, he's now played almost double the amount of time for Ireland that he's played anywhere else the whole season. He's played 10 more minutes for Ireland than he's played for Leinster. He's played 21 minutes for Leinster and played 31 minutes for Ireland.
30, yeah. That's like, you know, it's mental. So like to expect him to play well would have been unfair. Do you know what I mean? It's like, but the question then you arise is, yeah, well, like, why is he playing? And again, it's obviously, look, at Farrell sees something in him. A lot of people do. Well, a lot of Leinster fans and media do see a lot of him potential-wise. And people are saying, you know, Carberry at 15 and Harry Byrne at 10, that could be your World Cup kind of thing. And then, you know, I don't know, have they just been blind to Hugo Keenan? I don't know, but
Hugo Keenan is just so solid that actually you forget he's class. That's the thing, because like he's not like a Zeebo with a bit of flair going to do something brilliant that'll let you remember him. I think everything he's doing is just so perfect. He's just getting such a good 9 out of 10 performance every time he plays it. He's catching every ball, he's making every pass, he's making the right decision with the ball in hand. The only thing I've ever seen him do wrong was he took the ball from the scrum half at some point during the Six Nations and it was the wrong decision. Other than that, he's been flawless.
It obviously resonated with you, Sam, if you still remember it.
It stands out because I went, geez, it's not like Keenan to make a wrong decision, because he's just been so good and he's been so, you know, perfect in what he's done that I think people do forget about him and they kind of go, you need a bit of excitement. It's actually, no, you need someone as unbelievably consistent as he has been. And he seems to, and, you know, touch wood, but he seems to just not be getting bogged down by injuries either. So
my only issue with him is he sounds very D4. And that's the only thing that I just can't get over that part.
You have an issue with that now. You have an issue with a large proportion of that Irish team.
I do. And it hurts to say, but it just, Do you know what I mean? I just like, oh, you grew up and you never really, you know, had any issues in life. You never had to want for much. But I thought Dan Sheehan was very impressive off the bench. I think he's ideal for this system. He's a big, athletic, mobile hooker. I think Kelleher also, like, this system suits players like that. I think that they looked very, you know, well suited. I think Balakoon, I think it would be hard to judge him off. Like, he was quiet, didn't get a lot of ball, but like every time he got the ball, it was exciting. His turn of pace is incredible. I hope we see him in Six Nations squads, because like I said, he's like, we're low, as we said before, low comes in more to the midfield, looks for the ball. I think Owen Harrison was saying to you on Twitter, Sam, you need then the opposition winger to be out on the wing creating that space, so it might lead to less ball. And I think, you know, I wouldn't be judging him purely off that. I'd be judging him more off now in the next few weeks how Ulster get on. My last point I wanted to say on this Ireland before we move on is there was a lot of annoyed Connacht fans when the team was announced. Obviously, no Connacht player in the 23. And a lot of them were saying that, you know, they weren't going to watch because they were so, you know, because there's no Connacht and they didn't feel included. I want to get your guys' opinions, because I'm obviously a much more recent Connacht fan. And even a recent like rugby fan, but it would never stop me watching Ireland because there was no Connacht players on it. I think a lot of people think that it's a slight to Connacht that there's no players being selected, but again, I just don't, like, Andy Farrell is not sitting there thinking this. Andy Farrell is picking players that we said that he thinks suits the system, that he thinks will play well on the day, whatever. Do you know what I mean? We've seen against the All Blacks, we had two players on the squad. I know that's only two players, but still, like, you had Bundiaki starting and you had Finlay Billam on the bench. Like, I want to get your guys' opinion on this. So, like, Westy, would that annoy you seeing that, or are you also aware of just the bigger picture kind of thing?
I'm aware of the bigger picture, right? Like, and I'm all for picking the team on the day, but I can't honestly tell you I'm as interested in Ireland team when there's not Connacht lads on the pitch. Like, I'm just not. Like, and you can say, like, oh, okay, after the Saturday of rugby, after the French game, after Ireland beating the All Blacks, Ireland versus Argentina was always going to be a bit lower key. But no, I think, like I said it before, like I said, you know, growing up when you're young, you just see the Ireland team. You don't really think about who's from where, and you know, you support the team. And then as you get a little bit older and you start to kind of, you know, understand a bit more about rugby and, you know, follow a bit more about rugby, like my teenage years, like I was always baffled by Gavin Duffy not being included in Ireland squads, because to me, this man was unbelievable. Now, again, from my hometown, from my area, so I was a little bit biased towards him, but you start to see, you know, you start to feel a little bit unrepresented by the squad. And I've never ever not support Ireland. I will never, ever not support Ireland. I'll never not want them to do, I'll never want them to win. And you're right. It's not a case of Andy Farrell sitting down and saying, how do I keep Connacht players out of this squad? But I think, and you can say this to an extent to Ulster players as well, we do not get looked on the same way as your problems. It's when Andy Farrell is not watching Connacht games, unless they're playing Leinster or Munster, then, you know, how are you ever going to get his attention?
He does watch the 3-minute YouTube video highlights, though. So, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's
what more do you need?
Yeah. Like?
But I understand that, though, and it's like when Paul Boyle made his debut, like, we were all very much interested in that game because he was on the podcast, you know, he's obviously, you know, plays for Connacht. Like, that was definitely, like, more exciting watching, you know, like, oh, when's Paul Boyle going to come on?
And it is different, like,
same with Blade.
I talk about Gavin Duffy not making it. That was at a time when Connacht weren't winning rugby games. You know, Gavin Duffy was even playing for Harlequins, you know, at the time when he was probably at the height of his career. But it's different now when, again, like, okay, so, like, we are competitive with the Irish provinces all the time. And, you know, we're beating Ulster and we should have beaten Munster. We are at a point now where we're like, hold on, you know, we do deserve a seat at the table. We deserve to be at least looked at the same way the other provinces are. And I think it's pretty easy, right or wrong, it's pretty easy to feel like you're not being looked at when you're winning and being very competitive in these games and it's not translating into players picked into squads.
No, that's 100% fair. That's why I wanted to get your opinion on it, because, like, as I said, like, you grew up diehard. Well, Sam, you didn't grow up diehard Connacht fan, but Wes, you grew up a diehard Connacht fan. Sam, you have a diehard Connacht fan. Sam, what? Yeah, how do you view it?
Yeah, I do. I'll always support Ireland, but I do find it harder to be as emotionally invested in games like that when there's not one player from Connacht playing. Like, I get overly excited when I see Beelum coming on, or when I see Bundy starting, or, you know, Blade playing, and like that. They're the ones I want to, like, score and stuff. Like, I remember against the All Blacks, I was kind of going, geez, Bundy, stop hitting rooks so you could be outside getting the try. Like, you know, that's what you want to do, and that's what you do, and that's you support your team. And it is disheartening when you don't see it. It's not going to stop me from watching them, but it's going to definitely make a bit more of a decision in terms of whether or not I'm as clued in or tuned into it. I do find it harder to be as up for it without seeing the Connacht lads. And I don't think it's ever going to be the majority the same way it is with Leinster, but no, I'd like to see one or two more involved. And I don't think it is a slight from Andy Farrell where he's gone, I don't rate them, so I'm not going to pick them. But I do feel, and this is probably semi-emotional, but I think I've rationally thought about it for long enough, I do feel like Connacht players have consistently had to play at a much higher standard than Leinster and Munster players in particular, and sometimes Ulster players, for it even to be considered. You know, like, the people are still saying that they want to see Doak get in because he's the future. He's played 5 professional games of rugby. Like, Caelan Blade has been consistently playing class for years. Marmion was inexplicably bombed out of the World Cup squad, inexplicably to an extent that Brian O'Driscoll was actually saying it should have been him ahead of Luke McGrath in the World Cup squad, which, you know, there's something wrong there if it's like O'Driscoll saying that, but hasn't even gotten a look in. And I'm, as far as I'm aware, not even been in a squad or a training squad since, even though he's consistently been played brilliant and has always stood up for Ireland. So I think that, you know, you get the likes of Baird coming in, who's had a good few run of games, or James Ryan, who they knew was the great white hope after playing 20 games for Leinster and never losing. But you have to play 50 or 60 games for Connacht to get the same thing. And I think that there is an emotional side of me that's probably going, it's a slight, but also there's been enough cases in points. Your Gavin Duffy's, your Matt Healy's, your Fionn Carr when he was playing for Connacht, it's inexplicable why they're not being brought in. And, you know, when you don't see Farrell in the sports ground and then the first time you see him is in the Aviva because it's 2 minutes from his gaff, it does kind of, it helps to reinforce that point in your mind. And that's why it's a bit more disheartening. Like when it happened at the weekend, you know, Baird coming in and Timoney coming in, I was hoping it would be Ulton. And it's the same with Carty. I thought that Carty deserved his place. I think he's been playing so well. And I don't know, other than him having potential, what Harry Byrne has done to be in the squad. And that's why I'm kind of going, the rational side of me can look at all of the evidence and go, you know, Carty's playing out of his skin. He's been told what he needs to work on by Farrell. He's mentioned that he's been told what he needs to work on and has obviously been doing those things. And he's been brought up into the squad. Why isn't he there? So yeah, like, I get it. I don't think that there is a personal slight by Farrell or Schmidt to not pick Connacht players, but I think that there is a system in place that has made Connacht seem lesser, and it's made it harder for players to break into that squad. And it's made it harder for me to care as much if there's no Connacht involvement whatsoever. I'm still always going to support Ireland. I'm going to want them to do well, but, you know, I'm going to want them to do that a little bit better if it's Mac Hansen on the wing, or like Marmion at 9, or Bundy playing at 12. Like, that's, they make you more emotionally invested.
No, I totally, you made great points there. I sent an angry tweet there because Farrell was saying, you know, it's up to the players to play their way into the team. And I was like, that's clear. Like, you know, I wasn't saying about it. I was like, you know, you have your favourites. You have the lads you like. Just come out. And, yep. I know you probably can't come out and say that because it's obviously
he's already come out and said that by saying form isn't the only thing he picks on. And
That's what annoyed me, because it's hypocritical of what he already said. And I was like, that's bullshit. Don't patronise us as Irish fans. Like, we know what's up. You're not going to sit there and tell us to... Like, what Jack Carty could have done no more this season, and even at the end of last season, to get into this team, and he didn't make it. And you can't be like, oh, it's play your way in. What does Carty have to do? Play fucking back row as well? Like, what more do you want from him?
Yeah, not just from a Connacht point of view. Like, the likes of Hume, like, your Ringrose played brilliantly against the All Blacks. I don't understand why we went so strong at the weekend. I talked about it last week. I talked about it a little bit now before we move on. But, like, for me, that Argentina game, it was never going to be easy. It was, you know, you needed a strong team, but I didn't see the point in like an unchanged 8 before the injuries, and then, you know, a nearly unchanged back line. Like, Balakoon coming in was almost token, in my opinion. You know, Murray was there so that Carberry could be brought into it with the experience, and that makes sense. But I'd just be, if I was my 5 weeks off and I spent them in Ireland camp and I didn't even get a look in, having, like, you know, the likes of Tom Daly not getting a look in the last time. I know it's not a participation medal to get into the Ireland squad, but you've been called up to the training squad for a reason. You need that experience. We've been shafted before in World Cups. We've been shafted before when, you know, it's it's only Italy. And it's like, yeah, well, I'm not fucking allowed to play in the other games because I haven't played enough times against Italy. Like, so it just, it's just this annoying roundabout that we're going through. And I do, as a Connacht fan, and to an extent as well, Ulster fans probably feel the same way, where I think you have to be playing 11 out of 10 games where Leinster players and Munster players, to an extent, get their sixes or sevens, and they're allowed to be in. Like, you could be a 10 capper for Leinster playing some like Benetton games, playing pretty decently and get in. Whereas you could be Gavin Duffy, who, like, he moved away because he was like, feck Ireland, this isn't happening for me. And he was, you know, he was brilliant and he was just completely overlooked for his entire career. And I feel like it's too late now to be saying it, but Matt Healy and Tiernan O'Halloran can have similar qualms with the Irish setup because they were playing out of their skin for years and never got a look in. And Buckley as well before he got injured. So
yeah, and there's several cases of it, all right. But that's like, you know, we all know that Farrell doesn't like Carrick, but just doesn't see him in his plans or whatever. Cooney was the same. I don't feel his bullshit. Like, do you know what I mean? That's what annoys me. Like, treating us like we're idiots.
It'd be perfectly okay for him to stand up and say, "I need them to play a certain system," and I look for players who can play into that system. Like, that's an okay thing for a coach to say. Not, "I'm going to pick players who are on form," when he's already said he's not going to.
Yeah, but funnily enough, if Farrell went and said that about Cooney and Carty with the current system he's playing, he'd be fucking called a liar straight
away. That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, Carty would flourish in that system. So would Cooney. It's just, oh God, I don't know. But look, we'll move on from the Irish stuff. It was still a very positive autumn internationals. We're going into the Six Nations now with, I think, definitely a much more positive outlook than we would have been even going into these autumn internationals. So that's all well and good.
One huge positive for you and for me as well, Westie as well. I know we love Peter O'Mahony on this, but Peter O'Mahony's finally back in everyone's good books. Like, you know, I think there was a lot of people writing his career off, but it's great to see the people back.
Well, I want to address this because someone tweeted me about it. Like, because I said before, I was like, I would be okay with leaving him out of these squads. And I was like, it's nothing against him, but I was saying, we know what O'Mahony brings you, and it's very good. But I would have also rather probably see Coombs. I know he probably was sick, obviously, but Coombs, Timney, like Paul Boyle, those I could probably think of more off the top of my head. But like, I would have rather see those play these internationals ahead of O'Mahony. It's not a diss on O'Mahony. This is news to some people. You can like some people and still be critical of them. You don't have to just shove your nose up their hole the whole time. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's okay to criticize people you like, and it's not even a criticism. It's just that Peter O'Mahony is what, 34, 35, off the top of my head, probably in around that range. We know exactly what he is, and he's fantastic. I just said on the same podcast that he's my favorite Irish player of all time.
32.
What is he? I was way off. Sorry. He's just been around for so long. But what I'm saying is, we know what he is. We know how good he is. But we don't know how good Nick Timoney is in an Irish jersey. We don't know how good Gavin Coombs is at Munster level. Let's see it on an international stage and just how good he is. Same with Paul Boyle. That's what my point is. It's okay. Like, people who are slagging him off for being crap, that's different. He was never crap. I'm sorry, that was another point in the O'Mahony thing. But yeah, we'll move on. Look, we've had some fantastic news coming out of Connacht today that Jack Carty has signed a 3-year extension to his current Connacht contract, keeping him at the sports ground until 2025, which is just, it was sort of out of the blue. I think, Westy, this was sort of been talked about for a while now because of Carty's non-inclusion in these Irish squads. I think a lot of people would not have, I don't think many Connacht players or Connacht fans would have blamed him for looking elsewhere. You know, he's probably coming in the last couple of years of his career. I don't think anyone would have blamed him for looking elsewhere for one big contract before he finishes up.
Well, first off, he's 29. So at the end of this cycle...
Am I just way off with ages? I think I could be way off. West, you're 42, right?
52.
52, sorry.
Yeah, he's 29. So and you're not the first person to say this to me today. Someone else said to me, like, oh, I thought he'd go finish his career somewhere else. But like, he'll be finished with Connacht at 32, 33. I think he'll still get a contract with a French team and make a bit of money for a couple of years at the end of that. It is shocking. Considering that we all heard rumors that he had offers from France last year and took this 1-year deal. But I'm optimistic about it. I think it shows a lot of really good signs for Connacht. I mean, I think Jack as a player probably wouldn't have taken the contract if he wasn't in talks with Andy Farrell. So you said he's clearly not in Andy Farrell's plans. I think he must be there somewhere. He must be told now that he's whatever, third choice, and Harry Byrne is third choice, but he's younger, so he gets a little more experience every now and again. So I think you know, Jack Carthy has probably been told to hold on to the World Cup. Yeah, there might still be a slot for him. I mean, I'm delighted about it. Whether or not it's the best decision for him as a player for his development, we'll see. I think for Connacht's development, it's definitely the best decision, because I think, again, if he keeps the form that he's had in the last kind of, you know, like, we'll be generous and say 7 or 8 months, because we'll go back to the end of last season, he's playing quite well. I think Connacht will flourish. But I also think it's kind of in the background, it's a really good sign, because, and Sam, you'll know the ins and outs of this, but like, I think our entire squad is out of contract this year, because normally we do half our squad and everyone's on 2-year contracts alternating. Whereas last year, everyone got a 1-year renewal. So I think our entire squad's out of contract at the end of the season. So the fact that, I think the
majority
fact that we...
There was one or two 2 years. I know some of the younger lads like Duggan got a 2-year, and some of the new signings like Mac Hansen got 2 years, but the majority, your Porches, your Beelums, your Carty, like Carty at the time said, great to commit for a year. So to me, that was almost like a long goodbye, and Beelum said similar. So I'm hoping that, like Westy, you just said that, there's indications from Farrell that they are in the plans, because I do think that would be the majority or the biggest thing for him in terms of whether or not he stayed.
Well, this is my point, is that like, this is really, hopefully, this feels to me like a really good sign that Carthy are going to get that little bit more back in going forward, because I think Carthy could get a good deal somewhere else. So it's obviously a lucrative contract for him to sign. I hope there's been some sort of input from the RFU, not necessarily in the sense of it being a central contract or anything, but in the sense that maybe they're committing financially a little bit more to Connacht to help us retain these, you know, like our kind of world-class players that we have, and helping us maintain the squad that we have. I mean, that was one of the things Andy Friend said when he signed up, was that he was waiting for a commitment from the RFU for his contract, that he didn't want just commitment to him, he wanted a commitment to the team. So I hope this is a sign of that. The fact that, one, again, I think it must be a lucrative deal for Jack Carthy. Two, the fact that it's 3 years, I think hopefully that shows that there is a little bit of backing coming from the IRFU to help us retain our players, because we are the lowest funded province. So the fact that we might be getting a little bit more help from the IRFU to keep developing and keep growing and maintain the at least the core squad that we have, I think it's really promising. And I hope that this is the first in a line of really good renewals that we're going to see in the next 6 months.
Farrell did say to Carthy, if you score 40 points a game and go unbeaten for the rest of the season, I'll consider you for the Six Nations. That's what he said. So, Carthy's nearly there. I think, Sam, another point of this is how much, this will also be huge in keeping other great players at the sports ground too, wouldn't it? Because, you know, keeping the likes of Carthy there for the next 3 years, like the likes of Marmy and the likes of Porch, knowing that he will be there is definitely, you know, it'll be more of a reason for them to stay as well.
Oh yeah, because on the basis of it is the first and foremost, these are lads that are going to work. So they want to work, you know, they want to be with their colleagues. They want to be with the lads that they get on with. So you see someone like Jack Carthy, who seems like a very popular person in the dressing room. I really wouldn't be surprised if he's named captain next year, because he's been captain a few times the last couple of weeks, even once when Butler was also on the pitch. So, you know, I think that there might be something in that as well. Like he's looking like a really experienced head. He's kind of running the whole thing. So them seeing someone like that signing on for 3 years, I think it's going to be a positive sign. I'm wondering, and this, like, I think contracts take a lot longer than reactionary like this, but I'm wondering if the likes of Sammy Arnold committing to a 3-year deal in France, are the 1 and 2 year contracts after COVID, after the financial instability that we've seen in the last year or two, are players going to start going, you know what, feck you, commit to me now. I want 3 years. Are you going to see a good few more 3-year contracts? Because it's not like, I don't think it's fair on players to have them on 2-year deals, because that could be, you know, the ruination of their career if something goes wrong, if there is an injury or something. You know, they want a financial commitment because it's a job at the end of the day. So I think that that's a great sign. I think it's good from the branch, most likely from the IRFU as well, to back Connacht in that and to keep their man, because, you know, it would be devastating for Connacht to lose him, not just because of how good a player he is, but replacing him. Like who would you bring to replace him? You know, there's not many players of Carthy's ability around that aren't playing international rugby and wouldn't command a high fee, or, you know, be in it unable to come to Connacht because they're playing internationally. There's not, like, you know, if you're playing for France or you're playing for Italy or you're playing for whoever, you're playing in those countries, and it's hard to lure them away, especially with like competition from England and France and Japan there. So, you know, to tie him down is going to be really, really beneficial. And I think it might be the start of tying down a few of maybe the bigger names to some of the bigger contracts before we see a wholesale renewal of 1 year and 2 years for some of the not so big names or some of the kind of more fringe players who do still have to prove themselves. You know, these 1 year contracts are there to prove yourself. I'm hoping that the next one is Porch. My worry is that Australia could do with him, and that now Australia are picking outside of Australia, he might get called up to something and, you know, move back for the World Cup, because he's a 15, and that's what, you know, Australia need is just depth of players. And so I'd hope to see him signed on. And then, you know, you want to hope that Beelum and Ulton being involved in recent squads is going to spur them on to sign on as well. So, you know, hopefully, but no, it's a carity party now this weekend, really hoping that it spurs on the rest of the team. And you see a positive kind of performance on Friday evening.
I want to, we should have given the Patrick Mahomes 10-year, $500 million deal. I think we really lock him down till he's 39. If Cardiff scores this weekend, I really want him to bring out the Make It Rain celebration. I don't know if that's possible or in taste for rugby, but if someone could be on the sideline with like 10 5-euro notes, just ready to go whenever he scores.
I got some like fake money that I use for teaching the kids how to, like, you know, doing money and stuff in class. I can bring some of that wave in the air, but I need to bring it back for Monday because I still need.
Or those Supreme money guns. If someone could have that as well, ready to go, that would be fantastic. Canada are back this Friday playing the Ospreys. Ospreys are fifth in the table, I think, off the top of my head. Yeah, fifth on 17 points. We were kind of discussing this beforehand. I wanted to ask you and get your opinion. Wes, you were saying, like, you know, obviously Conor Player is not involved this weekend with the Ireland squad. Week before, you only had really Finlay and Bundy. And the week before, I think we had Finlay and Bundy again, I think, as well. Are you happy that Connacht are coming back with a lot of rested players, or would you have rathered a few of them sort of in that camp, you know, kind of ticking over? What would you prefer as a fan?
It's a good question. I mean, I think a lot of the players, you know, the likes of Sexton and maybe your Furlongs and your Porters, they might not start for their provinces. Well, obviously Sexton won't because he's injured, but, you know, the guys who've racked up a lot of minutes over the last 3 weeks probably won't play for the provinces this coming week. So I think it's kind of a fine line. I think if you're looking at someone like Joey Carberry or even Nick Timoney or Ryan Baird, who came on, you know, were late additions to the squad or late additions to the starting panel, I think they'll be coming back with a load of confidence. I think that's the beauty of being in an Ireland squad for 3 weeks and getting your run out, even if it's a bit of a blowout. Like, as long as you kind of hold your own, and, you know, even like the Balogun, right? Didn't when he got himself involved, he was very good, but wasn't as involved as maybe you thought he was going to be. You still come back with quite a high level of confidence, and you take what you've kind of learned in the Ireland camp and you bring it into your provincial side. So I think that's something that we'll be missing. I also think that, and again, look, it's maybe I'm romanticizing a little bit, but I think things were finally starting to click for us just before the break. So I am worried that such a long break off for a lot of players is going to be a little difficult. Now, I know we played an A game a couple of weeks ago, so lads got a run out, but I think the break might just be a little bit too much for us. We might have to claw back a bit of ground that we lost in terms of our performance and our form and our consistency. So I would have liked to have seen more involvement from the Connacht boys. The likes of Ulton, who has spent the last 3 weeks involved in an Ireland squad or last month in an Ireland squad and not doing anything. I mean, that's not good for his development. I mean, as beneficial as I'm sure the training is, I'm sure it does hurt your confidence a little bit to not get picked to be involved at all. So I'm a little bit trepidatious about the team coming back.
Oh, Westy, what a drop.
I know, I love that one. Oh,
that's a good one.
There's a backstory to that.
Westy's got his word of the day toilet paper.
Yeah. Westy and me started, that's how I met Westy. We worked together. Backstory for anyone who didn't know. One day we were talking and he dropped the word trepidatious. I had no idea what it meant, but Westy just dropped it in casually as if it was nothing. I was like, this guy's read books before. That's how smart this guy is.
That's what you get from an NUIG arts degree in English, where it's like
I heard on the radio they're going to change the name to University of Galway. It's like, it used to be University College Galway, then they changed it to NUIG, and then they were the only NUI left. So now it's going to UG.
The UOG.
UG.
Well, I went out to Sligo where we drank a lot. So there was no one was dropping the word trepidatious in Sligo, I guarantee you that.
Was it? No, that's no, like the red lights getting a battered sausage saying trepidations, no?
Yeah, they're all any the four lights, man, what was it called? That's what they were showing. Yeah, it was. Well, this is the thing with Sligo. The name was clearly Four Lanterns, but due to the education system, everyone called it Four Lights. Because lanterns was almost a bit fancy for, you know, to be a fancy light. So everyone just called it Four Lights, even though it's Four Lanterns. Sorry, we totally went on a tangent there. Sam, sitting currently in ninth, just one spot outside the top eight. Ospreys, you know, going along nicely, 4 wins out of 5. This is not going to be an easy game on Friday.
No, not at all. Kind of hoping that, you know, they had a few players involved with Wales that might not be playing. Or be rested, and that's the upside for us. But no, it's definitely going to be tough. I think the benefit, we spoke about it just before the break, and we were saying, is this month off, you know, is this bad considering the Ulster win and hoping to build on it? And I said, for any other year, it probably would be bad. But this year, we were amassing a good number of injuries, and I'm hoping that those sort of players are back. Like Wooten played at the weekend, or played in that A game, and a couple of players coming back a little bit sharper, having worked on things like the restart. I think that month off might have done us good, whereas usually we'd use these sort of months to get a couple of points against teams that are weakened by the internationals. I think that the fact that we had so few away, Friendly's probably been able to use most of his squad, his desired squad, and put together a proper preseason. So I think that it'll stand to us, and that we'll change. We'll want to change the atmosphere around the sports ground as well, because that Dragons loss had such an impact, and it was so negative at the time, that I think that there'll be a good showing from Connacht. It's a shame now that we won't get Papali at the weekend, but no, just big shout out to him. I'm not sure if it's actually been officially announced yet, but you know, he's let slip on social media that he got called up for the Samoa match on Saturday against the Barbarians. So Samoa, my second favorite international team. I grew up, you know, the likes of Brian Lima and Lomé Fatau, and just seeing all these speedsters and these big hits going in against England in 2003. And I was like, oh, when I saw a Connacht player getting called up for them, I was chuffed. Yeah, so happy out for him. And hopefully he'll be a guest one day. You know, if we mention his name enough times, he might come on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I don't know if he has announced it. Well, like, they're going to announce the squad and he's going to be on it.
Well, so they announced the squad, and they had a little nota bene at the bottom that said, another player to be added to the squad. So I think they were waiting on the finalization of like whether or not he'd be allowed to be released, because it's outside of the international window, so he would have had to get the permission to be released for it. So
fair play to Conor Delaney Frank, because I'm sure that's been an ambition for his for a long, long time. So
yeah,
fair play, because, you know, I'm sure he would have been thereabouts for selection this weekend. So fair play to Andy Frank and Conor for letting him go.
I read a couple of the bits around Jack Carty's contract renewal, and one thing he said, which really was very interesting because it stuck out. He said, like, the last 6 months have been some of the most enjoyable of his career, which, you know, he's playing quite well, and he's, you know, people are talking positively about him across Ireland in terms of being in an Irish squad. So that's definitely going to help your confidence. But another thing he said a lot to do with how Friendly is such a good player manager and how he goes above and beyond for his players. I think stuff like that, I think allowing players, you know, go play for Samoa outside of the test window to potentially make their debut for an international rugby team, for a player that went from semi-pro to professional at the age of 27. I think that that's huge. And it does, it definitely stands to us. And I think that we all know and appreciate how good a bloke Andy Friend is. You had him on the podcast, you were chatting to him. But I think that just shows it again. Like, it's just really good bloke. And if he was the one behind the decision to allow Pavli to go, that's class.
Yeah, if around Saturday, I think it's Saturday, is it the game?
Saturday, yeah.
Saturday. Watch it, you know, support Big Papa, obviously, tweet about it.
Hopefully he gets
hopefully he gets some game time. But even the fact that he's called up is obviously fantastic for him and a reward for his performances. So support him when possible. And yeah, I think we'll wrap up there, boys, anyway. But we're heading to the game Friday. Obviously, hopefully a big turnout. We're going. Me and Wesley might go for a few pints afterwards. Sam, you can, because you're boring.
I'm gonna watch your toy father. Show. Nothing boring about the toy show.
Yeah, I know. That's true. But yeah, we'll be back then next week to recap. We are working on a big guest. I won't spoil any more by saying that. But hopefully, in the next few weeks, we'll have a guest coming on, because it's been a while since we've done a guest. So hopefully, that'll be announced in the next week or so. So if you've listened this far, there's a little reward for you, a little spoiler. And if you haven't listened this far, then screw you, you know, screw you personally.
How long do people have to listen before it registers as a listen on all those apps?
Like a minute.
Oh, sweet.
Okay. My mother will, she won't be listening to this, that's for sure. But my mother texts me one week going, great podcast. And I was like, oh, thanks, man. I was like, I hope you didn't listen to all of it, because it was an hour long rugby podcast, which my mother wouldn't know anything about rugby. And then she responded going, no, just the first minute. So she said, great podcast, and she only listened to 1 minute. That is supportive parenting right there. Yeah, so shout out to Mammy Murphy for her support as always. But yeah, boys, we'll leave it there. We'll be back again next week to recap all the... A great Connacht win, I'm calling it now. So cheers, boys. Catch you next week.
Cheers. Bye.